This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Earthwise, Environment and Peace with Justice interviews on Plains FM 96.9.
Welcome to Earthwise. I'm Lois Griffiths. Today's program is basically a repeat of an interview we did in 2013 with Jeff Halper of Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. We talked about the vicious attacks on a Palestinian family in the West Bank, the Atta Jaber family. So we'll listen to that, and then we'll finish by bringing the news of what was done to this family right up to date, 2018. In this interview, by the way, Jeff talks about coming to New Zealand, which he did. Martin and I were delighted to have him stay with us. Let's hear now the 2013 interview. Good evening. I'm Lois Griffiths. Martin is with me for an interview with Dr. Jeff Halper in West Jerusalem. Jeff is a co-founder of ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. ICAD goes to great efforts to inform the public around the world and in Israel, too, about the ongoing cruel human rights violations against Palestinians, especially the ethnic cleansing policies, including house demolitions.
Well, Lois and I have met Jeff when we went to Israel and the West Bank, taking part in what you could call alternative or educational tours run by ICAD. They gave us the opportunities to see things and meet people and learn things that are hidden from most tourists. There isn't so much we could discuss with Jeff, but we've decided to start with discussing what has happened to a family near Hebron that we have visited twice. So welcome to Earthwise, Jeff Halper of ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jeff, as Martin has said, we've twice in consecutive years visited the Atta Jaber family at their home in a fertile valley near Hebron. The family served tea. Palestinians are always offer hospitality and a huge bowl of their own grapes. They're farmers, aren't they? That's how they survive economically. Could you tell us, please, about the sort of violence that Atta and his family have been and are subjected to?
Yeah, Atta and his family, you know, often say that the whole occupation is on their heads. In other words, everything you read about has happened to them. They're living, you know, they've lived for generations. Matter of fact, they used to live in caves. There are many Palestinians, there's caves there that are actually very roomy and very comfortable. And for hundreds of years, the family lived in a cave. And then began to build a house. But this whole valley is like one of the breadbaskets of Palestine. Grapes, olives, a lot of produce from the valley right down near Hebron. But after 1967, of course, Hebron became a focal point for Israeli settlers, and the most fanatical ones. So in the city of Hebron itself, they've carved out a whole part of the city for Israeli Jews only, and this terrible violence towards the Palestinians that are living there. And over the years, the settlement has moved out in the direction of Atta's farm and this valley. And there's a big new settlement that has new suburbs to it, or new neighborhoods all the time, that's called Kiryat Arba, which again is one of the most fanatical parts of the settler movement. And it's moved out, you know, of course, all the planning and all the building for these massive, you know, settlements isn't really the right word because it minimizes the reality. These are really satellite cities. I mean, Kiryat Arba is about as close to 10,000 people today. But massive building and all kinds of institutions, all done by the government and planned by the Ministry of Defense. So this is a defense government. It's not just settlers that ran out and did this. It's with the the support of the government. And Kiryat Arba has then been steadily moving out on top of Atta Jaber's farm. First, his father's house was literally swallowed by Kiryat Arba. They built a huge retaining wall on top of the cave, partly on top of the house itself, just destroyed most of the farm, and all the almond trees, the olive trees, the grapes, and so on, and built this huge, really very, I think, kind of ugly settlement on top. And now they built then a highway, I mean, a major highway through their farm. And then on the other side from his father's place where Atil is, they've declared that the next neighborhood of Hebron, of Kiryat Arba. And so Atta has been subjected by tremendous pressures by the settlers and the army. His home has been demolished twice. And we at ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, have rebuilt it each time. A few years ago, his home was invaded by settlers. On Friday, they came, they broke into the home, threw the family out violently, stayed in the house, you know, men, women, and children, Israeli settlers, the Jews praying, and stayed, and the army and the police were there. They stayed all Friday night, all Saturday, and Saturday night, after the Sabbath is over, they burned the house and you know, chipped away at a lot of the, they had marble and stonework and so on, including sayings from the Quran, you know, tried to destroy the house, and then peaceably hundreds of people walked back to the settlement through the Israeli army, the Israeli police, all documented, no one ever arrested or ever charged with anything. And since then, he's been attacked all the time, and now they're trying to dry up that entire valley. The Israeli army comes every year and rips up all the irrigation pipes. Palestinians are arrested. I was arrested, actually, in one incident of, you know, the Palestinians can't get water. So they dig, like, reservoirs, small reservoirs, to collect rainwater to water their fields. And that's illegal, and those reservoirs get destroyed. So they're destroying the livelihood. They're destroying this beautiful agricultural landscape. They're destroying the homes and destroying the lives. I mean, this is exactly the epitome of ethnic cleansing and trying to drive these people out.
And they get away with it, don't they?
It's just very physical. I mean, the injustice is in your face. You don't have to try to understand what's happening. It's very clear what the Israeli intent is.
And this is the sort of thing we never hear a word about in our mainstream media. We never hear anything about this sort of thing. It goes on day by day.
Yes.
Does it get into the Israeli media?
No, that's true.
Does it get into the Israeli media?
No, because, you know, when we started our work 16 years ago, we managed to get some things into the press, the international press and the Israeli press, about house demolitions, because each story is a terrible event of traumatized families, of people being thrown out of their houses. Israel has demolished 28,000 Palestinian homes in the occupied territory since 1967. And what I hasten to say, because I know what a lot of people are led to believe, is that these are homes of terrorists, or these are, you know, there's a security reason for this. It is not true. These are homes of normal, average people that simply want to build a modest home on their own land. They're not invading public space or anything. This is their own land. And Israel's policy is not to allow Palestinians to build for the last two generations. You can imagine the crowdedness and the difficulties that creates. And it's demolished 28,000 homes. But each of those homes is a story in and of itself, of a family, people working hard, trying to better their lives, trying to, you know, in Arab society, when a young person, when a boy wants to marry, he has to have a home to offer his bride before the marriage can take place. Well, if they can't have homes, it disrupts the entire social system. People can't get married. They have nowhere to live. You have 5, 6, 7 kids. They have nowhere to be. And then the homes are demolished that are built. You know, sometimes they build, they have no choice. Homes are demolished. The kids are traumatized. I mean, each one of those 28,000 is a whole story almost by itself, of suffering and traumatization and terrible things that are being done to normal people. I mean, these aren't political people, and that's why it's really an attack on a society. You know, Israel puts it in the framework of a conflict. There is no conflict. Israel is simply trying to expand from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan River and get rid of the Palestinians or imprison them in little tiny islands that we call areas A and B. And that's simply the agenda. And we try to fight that. And we try to fight it by bringing out the stories of these families. The problem is that after 16 years of working, it's not news anymore. Journalists will say to us, look, you know, we covered that 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so that's where Israel wins, in a sense. There's outrage in the first few houses you hear about, but then the whole thing becomes a kind of routine of suffering.
I know a lot this sort of thing is going on all over the West Bank, but this particular settlement, Kiryat Arba, has a particularly notorious reputation. Could you tell us anything about the background of the settlers of Kiryat Arba?
Well, you know, the settlers of Kiryat Arba are very religious. I mean, a lot of the settlers are very religious. From a biblical point of view, we don't call it the West Bank. It's called Judea and Samaria. And, of course, Hebron was one of the holy cities in the Holy Land. Hebron, Jerusalem, Tiberias, in the Old Testament. These were all the parts of the holy cities. And so, and Hebron is where the Abraham is buried. So it became very early on, from 1967, from the beginning of the occupation, it became a focal point for really fanatical and very violent settlers going down to Hebron. Hebron is a city of 120,000 people, Palestinians. It's a Palestinian city. And when the settlers came in, you know, it wasn't that they came in and said, look, we would like to have a Jewish presence here. We want to come back. You know, we have holy sites. They said, this is our city. This is a holy city of Jews exclusively. And the entire process over the last 40-some years has been to, again, either get the Palestinians out of that, you know, there are 120 families. That's all of the settlers in a city of 120,000 people, but they have about a third of the city. And the Palestinians that are living in their part, that are about 30,000, are literally imprisoned. Their homes are behind fences. They even have, they live in cages, the Palestinians, because the settlers try to make their lives miserable. They throw garbage on them. They throw wastes at them. The kids attack the Palestinian kids all the time, or overthrow the carts that Palestinians have of fruit that they're trying to sell. They've closed the market. In other words, it's really hell. I mean, if you want on this planet, unfortunately, there's a few places, but this is one of them, where you want to see Dante's hell in actuality, the old city of Hebron that's been taken over by the settlers is that place where Palestinians are literally living in cages and getting refuse thrown at them all the time in order to make them leave.
You're listening to Earthwise on Plains FM. This evening's guest is Jeff Halper of ICAD, Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, and we're talking to him in Jerusalem now. He will be coming to New Zealand very soon in early September, so you will have the opportunity to hear him in person.
And by the way, before we forget to say it, you can read the story we're talking about on the ICAD website, which is ICAHD.org. Very, very interesting. Well, they're good people, those ICAD people. But back to Hebron.
We try.
Yeah, well, there's a New Zealand connection. I don't know if you're aware, but a friend of ours, a Quaker in a city south of us, was in Hebron four times as a Christian peacemaker. So we've heard some of the stories about the violence. But I'm reading on the computer, the violence is getting much worse in recent times. They're attacking children, aren't they? I'm talking about the army violence, not just the settler violence. Could you comment on the army themselves?
No, it's always been bad. I think the settler violence has always been bad. It's, the problem is that settlers can do anything they want to do. They're never arrested. You know, now we have this new phenomenon where it's gotten worse in a sense. Is we have a new generation of kids. We talked about the settlers. We talked about people, religious or not religious, going to Judea and Samaria and settling and trying to kind of push out the Arabs, as we call the Palestinians. We don't use the word Palestinians. We say Arabs because we don't recognize them as a people. And you had that whole thing. But now you've got a new generation of kids that were born in these settlements. We call them the hilltop youth because they're extremely aggressive. I mean, now they're the natives. You know, their parents had come as settlers. They're not settlers. These are native-born people of Judea and Samaria that are a weird combination of being kind of like young people with rock music and long hair and everything else, but being religiously fanatic. I mean, more fanatic than their parents and more violent. I'm saying this in an accurate way because I know these kids and what they do. They're like Clockwork Orange. There's no emotion. I mean, they're so fanatical. There's no emotion. Arabs are simply objects to be squashed. And so the violence that these kids are exerting against the Palestinians doesn't even have a political point to it in a way. You could say, all right, the parents are being violent because they're a part of ethnic cleansing. They're trying to push them out, and they're trying to take their land. But that's been done. And now you simply have the kids that are simply being violent. They're attacking mosques. They attack cars of Palestinians. They beat up the kids. And these attacks have a name. They're called the price tag attacks. The idea that the Palestinians are going to pay a price until they get out. And they're violent, vicious attacks on Palestinians, done at night, sometimes in the day. They spray graffiti like death to Muhammad and Arabs should die and terrible, terrible things. And they're known. They're not arrested. They're not harassed. Once in a while, one of these kids gets picked up for a couple hours and then let go. So this is absolutely and completely allowed officially by the Israeli police and the Israeli army. So that, in a sad sense, it's gotten worse because it's gone beyond politics. Their parents, you might say, were political, violent terrorists in a way. But there was a certain political agenda they had. The kids are simply violent in almost a non-political way of this hatred of Arabs being so deep. That violence is the only way. They don't try to explain it. They don't talk about it. They don't have manifestos. They don't write books. They're simply violent, pure violence, like in Clockwork Orange.
But
of course, Ata and his family are exposed largely to those people, those young people, because that's where they're living, right opposite the settlement, so that every few weeks, we were just out there a couple weeks ago, every few weeks these kids come and they harass the family, they uproot his gardens, they'll sit on his front steps for hours, sometimes singing songs, being very provocative, making obscene gestures at the kids. Or riding horses around his house, or driving tractors around his house, in a way to simply humiliate and harass him and harass him and harass him. And he's frustrated and traumatized. He calls the police, he calls the army, nothing ever happens. On the contrary, they protect these kids against him. Oh. And so that's part of the daily life that Ata, representing tens of thousands of other Palestinians, live.
What you're saying is so terrible. Is this sort of encouraged in the schools or just ignored, or the education is just racist like that, or what?
Yeah, the education is in that sector And it's true, I think, in the religious public schools here, is absolutely racist, period. I mean, there's no sense of democracy. Democracy is, in fact, seen as a Greek concept. What does that do with Jews? Jews were never, you don't have democracy in the Bible. And so the whole thing boils down to, this is our land, and God gave it to us, and these Arabs are all terrorists, they're all intruders, we have to get them out of our land. And that's what's taught officially in the Israeli schools, in the public schools, to these religious kids. There is no balance, you know, in a secular school at least. I mean, it's also pretty right-wingish. But in a secular school, you know, you would learn about democracy. You have civics classes. Of course, we're talking about a Jewish democracy, which is a weird concept, but you would use that term. You would never really talk about democracy in a religious public school because it's not Jewish. And so you fall back on this very, what I would consider racist, chauvinistic, and violent and exclusivist idea that this is our country and God gave it to us and it's absolute and we've got to get these. And anybody that resists, you know, there's a concept in the Bible of Amalek. Amalek was a tribe that attacked Moses and the Israelites as they were coming out of Egypt. And they've been made into the archetype of evil. Amalek is like the devil. And, you know, the Nazis were Amalek, the Cossacks were Amalek, maybe the Inquisition. And now that, and it's a very hard religious term. You don't use it lightly. And so the Palestinians have been characterized now as Amalek, as the evil. So what you learn in a religious public school is that these are the evil people. And with Amalek, not only can you kill them, but you have a duty to kill them. And that's what these hilltop youth, that's the ideology, the religious ideology that they're armed with. The idea that when they attack an Arab, that's a mitzvah, that's a good deed. Because they're, you know, they're liberating the land of Israel like Moses did, rather than having concepts of democracy, human rights, civil rights, law, and so on, nonviolence that you know, that we all tried to pursue.
Was there a Brooklyn connection with some of these settlers in Kiryat Arba? Did some of them come from Brooklyn?
A lot of the religious settlers are Americans. It's true. And probably Brooklyn, too. You know, because they're religious, you know, that's one of the centers of religious, but they're Orthodox Jews. I'm not ultra-Orthodox. They're not Hasidic Jews, you know, that wear the black and everything. They're what we call modern Orthodox, but you know, they're kind of a mixture of super-Orthodox fundamentalist and super-Zionist. And so a lot of them are Americans, it's true, but a lot of them are, I mean, now, for example, the head of the guy that started the whole settler movement, who lives in Hebron, is a guy named Moshe Levinger and his wife Miriam. They're very famous. They were the militant settlers of the last generation. They came from the States.
Oh, my gosh.
And their son, whose name is Malachi Levinger, is today the mayor of Kiryat Arba, and he's one of the people that comes physically and attacks Atta Jaber's family. In other words, when we're talking about these attacks, it isn't only the hilltop youth and these packs of kids. They're also led in because they're given legitimacy by the older generation. So Levinger's son, who's the mayor of Kiryat Arba, the guy, I guess, in his 40s, leads the attacks on Atta, leads the attacks of the hilltop youth on Atta. So there is an American connection to it, but you know, they're really accepted by and protected by the Israeli establishment in general. So I would still call it an Israeli phenomenon.
I'm afraid our time is about up, Jeff. We'll have to stop soon in a moment.
I'm glad you're coming to New Zealand. There's so much you have to tell us. And it must be awfully hard for Jews living in Israel to hear about this sort of thing. This isn't the Jewish tradition, is it?
Yeah. First of all, you're right. It's not in the media because it happens so often and it's so routine that it's not news. And second of all, Israelis don't want to know. They simply don't want to know what's going on. They know something's not so great, but they're living their good lives. They're insulated. They don't see it. They don't care about it. They don't care about Arabs. And so, in a sense, they know and they don't know.
I see. Well,
or, you know, they watch it on the news. Sometimes it's a terrible attack. It is on the news. But then, you know, you go to the next news item. Nothing, it doesn't affect public opinion here in Israel.
Oh, gosh, a sad note to end on. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Jeff. I'm afraid we are out of time.
Yes.
But we're looking forward to seeing you in New Zealand.
Okay, thanks for having me on, and I'll see you in a couple months.
Good.
Right, okay, goodbye.
Bye.
Now we'll bring the story up to date. On the 21st of February this year, 2018, the bulldozers of Israeli's so-called civil administration, which means the military, destroyed the farm of the Jaber family in the Baca Valley near Hebron. The civil administration claimed that the Jaber land is state land, although the family has lived on it for generations and has an Ottoman period deed. So the bulldozers arrived, accompanied by soldiers, and destroyed all the crops in the family's tiny fields, the terracing Atta had painstakingly done stone by stone for years, and the cistern which he dug to collect rainwater. 150 fruit trees were uprooted, including olives, figs, grapes, and almonds, along with grapevines. Atta estimates the damage at $50,000. Atta is ruined. His family is destitute. This is how Palestinians are treated. From us at Earthwise, goodbye.